Is this the second podcast in a row where you set the brief and then not stuck to it? Ours was a one-off special edition because it had a 3D printed gear knob, courtesy of Paul Wager.
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the Classics World Chat Show, a positively petrol-powered podcast of chat. So, right, let's crack on. I'm Phil Whedon and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Jeff Ruggles.
Hello.
And Joe Miller.
Hello, everyone. That's an excellent intro, sir. Well done.
Do you know what? I was really worried I was going to trip over that. There was a lot of tongue twisters going on. You probably feel like you deserve a holiday because you have only just put to bed the next edition of Classic Car Buyer on sale 29th of July.
Does happen so, every week.
Hot off the presses. Jeff, you can give us the latest rundown of all the news.
We've kind of gone a bit modern with the news take again this week because upcoming, in fact, something you pointed out, upcoming Euro 7 regulations is going to involve brake particle emissions, which to cut a long and very dull tale short for our purposes means that garages are likely to have to fit brakes and discs in pairs because they're certified together, which is going to mean probably going to franchise dealers and or eventually have a knock-on effect for independent garages, traditional, you know, garages, and of course spoil options for those just wanting to replace discs or pads without doing the other bit. So it's just one of the hurdles that independent garages are facing, and there's been some analysis as well that, you know, costs are going to go up, it's hard to find staff, and the relevance here is that it once again for me proves that if you went down the heritage engineering route and joined someone like the Heritage Skills Academy at Bicester, then you're probably a bit safer. You're kind of isolated from this. And in a world where careers are being taken away by AI, having proper hand skills and fabrication skills somewhere like the Heritage Skills Academy, I think is very valuable.
AI can't change brake pads, can it?
Well, it also can't make a wing out of a sheet of aluminium using an English wheel, can it? You know,
it can't even draw a picture of a wing for an MGB. We've seen what some of those AI pictures look like. So just to clarify, is that an emissions thing? It's the emissions of the brake.
The sort of OEs, they've got to share data. Otherwise, we're all going to be forced to use original equipment parts because they're the ones that are certified. I mean, it's obviously down the line. The Euro 7 is due to come in at the end of the year, and that will mean this applies to new cars. But it's the knock-on effect. If we're getting to a stage where we have a lot of EVs, we have the need to put certified parts on, then independent garages might struggle to compete.
And as if independent garages didn't have enough challenges as
well,
it is.
This is it. And you know, we still rely on these sort of independent garages to keep our older cars on the road. I mean, our local, it was a Ford dealer. It became independent and it's now gone. And it's really, really sad for me because they were very good at servicing my car. And they were one of those kind of garages that still had lots of old bits in stock. And they're gone. And it's not an isolated incident. A lot of these garages are going and they're finding it very difficult to recruit as well. Because for some reason, I don't know, being a car mechanic is still looked down a little bit. And the pay isn't as strong as other sort of comparable industries. So the heritage skills route to me seems like a way, if you're a youngster who wants to get into the motor trade, seems like a really clever way of getting in.
How does this potential ruling, Jeff, apply if I'm a DIY person and I fit those? Does that still control the market because I've got to go and buy my brake discs and pads as a combined set from my local main dealer because a motor factor won't supply the original part, or what?
That is still to be cleared up, really. That's not been explored. People are just, industry kind of stakeholders are just a little bit aghast. Like it's mainly come from the aftermarket, of course, as you'd expect, because they're worried that it's going to affect their businesses. And in nicer news, a Mercedes 190e has broken an auction record for a non Cosworth or AMG model by selling for over £24,000 at Manor Park. That's impressive.
Wow. Wow, that's extraordinary.
19,000 mile example. Lovely. It's 2 litre. I think it's a K-Reg. A really impressive result. It's a car that sold for over £20,000 before, in truth, but last year. But now there's another £4,000 on that. So quite interesting, I think.
That is extraordinary. In my news, I went to the Bromley Pageant of Motoring, and it's the first time I went there since it relocated to the South of England showground. I loved it. It's definitely captured all the spirit and essence of the original show as it was housed at Norman Park back in the day. And I know there was a little bit of commentary when we moved it about the whole ULEZ thing, because it was like, well, none of the classic cars are affected by ULEZ because they're exempt. But I think what people perhaps overlooked is that A, there are some modern classics that would get affected by the ULEZ. And second of all, it's all the traders' vans and the fairground rides and all those sort of things that turn up. They are affected. And of course, members of the public that turn up, they would have been affected by ULEZ. So the move is, I think, valid, however unfortunate it may be. But what I was pleased with is it genuinely had captured the essence of the original show. The one-make parking bit, we've done a video that went live on Wednesday this week of me just walking around the one mate parking. Something for everyone. I know every car show can lay claim to that, but these are thousands of cars.
Yeah,
it was just glorious. I could have happily spent many more hours just wandering up and down the one mate lanes, chatting to some of the
owners. Of all the cars there that stood at me, I should disclose I wasn't there because I was at BSB at Brands Hatch. But watching the video, one of the cars that stood out to me most that you found was that absolutely mint base spec 106.
Yep.
Which is a very good segue, isn't it? But I'll let you take the reins for that one.
It does go to show, gentlemen, does it not, the somewhat unsurprising appeal of a basic sort of classic car, basic spec, bottom of the line. None of your XRs or your STs or your RSs or your Cosworths or your Deluxes. No, we want base model. Base model is best. We want to select three base spec cars because, of course, it's also the Festival of the Unexceptional tomorrow as we record.
Well, yes.
Tomorrow as we go out, I should say. So it's a perfect time to celebrate the exceptional unexceptional. So I wanted us to sort of list three base spec cars. And I have to disclose that I've perhaps been a bit more generous in my definitions than some of you.
Is this the second podcast in a row where you've set the brief and then not stuck to it?
Quite possibly. I will let you and the viewers and listeners decide. But but anyway, we will see. So this, Jeff, you should definitely start, because your list is undoubtedly better than mine, but let's get cracking. What's your first basic
brilliant? Someone put in the comments last week that I'm never aspirational and I just like, you know, cheap cars.
I think you're about to live to that reputation.
Without further ado, here are three base model cars. I'm going to start with the car that I own, which is the Mini City. As if a Mini 850 wasn't basic enough, in 1979, BL decided to launch the City, which is sort of did away with the chrome bumpers, had a simple houndstooth interior, rubber mats, one center dial, and really not a lot else. Very, very basic. But it did have some cheery colors and sort of stripes down each side, especially on the early ones. Well, for 2 years anyway. The early ones were 850s, which lasted until the Metro came out and they dropped the 850 engine. Then they became 998s. Basically lasted right through until 1992. But it's the early 850 one that I really like, and I've specifically been looking for one for several years, and now I've managed to procure one, which is nice. And this is going to sound very bizarre, and people will probably flame me, but I'd rather have it than a Cooper S.
It's probably rarer. It's definitely rarer.
It's undoubtedly rarer, but it's just because I had one when as my first car, it's entirely nostalgia-driven, but I absolutely love the thing. And when it's been to meets, it has attracted a lot of attention simply because very few of them exist. Bizarrely, there is another identical one locally, so I have seen double on a couple of occasions. But the City name was also included on the Metro from 82. You could have a City or even a City X.
Whoa.
Which had, I believe, extra bits, including headrests, and you could even have the 1275 engine. And of course, you had a Maestro City or City X, which had the steel bumpers to mark you out as having the poverty spec version.
Huge appeal to that. I have to say, if I was in the market for a classic Mini, I would probably want a really basic one. Yeah, I can see the appeal of that hugely.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay then, Joe, follow a Mini City.
I can make your Mini look luxurious by comparison. So my first one is a car that we have owned. Long, long, long-term viewers of Classics World will remember when we had one of these. My first choice is the Peugeot 205 Junior, which of course was the base spec 205, bottom of the range. I think they did a few different engines. Ours was the 1.8 diesel, but I believe you could get it with the small petrol engine as well. And this was the basest of the base. Steel wheels, obviously unpainted bumpers, and there was nothing. You got no rear wash, no rear wipe, no fogs, wind-up windows, no center storage bin. The lid was just paneled over. You got no rev counter because you've got a clock to time you 0 to 60s. You didn't even get a glove box lid. You just got the glove box itself, no lid on it. It doesn't get much more basic, but actually in that French small car way, I think that's how the 205 should be enjoyed. Basic, utilitarian, as was that diesel one that, you know, rattled like an old tractor, but it was charming for it. I wouldn't have wanted the leather and the electric windows and the sunroof. The charm in that car was its basicness. And you could put a hay bale in the back of it if you want to.
More Roland Rat than Roland Garros.
If I was going to have a 205 and it wasn't a GTI, I would have a Junior, because I think a small French Super Mini of the 80s is never going to be a luxury car, so embrace the utilitarian nature of it.
I think the one that we had was actually kind of technically a special edition.
Ours was a one-off special edition because it had a 3D printed gear knob, courtesy of Paul Wager. So yes. But no, not just the memories attached to it. I think a small French car in the a la 2CV or Renault 4 should be utterly basic and utilitarian. And for me, 205 Junior, Perfect.
There are probably many 205 juniors and similar spec 205 still doing sterling service in rustic corners of France, even Definitely. Now, I imagine. Because those diesel engines are unburstable, aren't they? They'll just go on forever. So they're brilliant. Well, as I confessed right at the start of this buying roundup, I've probably stretched the definition of base model somewhat, because I found myself rightly or wrongly going down a rabbit hole of finding special editions that were largely based on base models, but they kind of tried to add a little bit of sprinkle, and therefore, in my eyes, a bit more appealing. So these are still by far not flagship models or sporty models. And I have to confess, some of my choices, my original choices, were also Jeff's choices. So I did sort of veer away from them so as to avoid duplication. But I've gone with Austin Metro, but I dug out one special edition that I remember because I had the brochure as a kid, because I used to cycle down to the local Austin Road.
You're a cool dude.
In Dartford, exactly. That's why I had no friends. No one wanted to go with me to the Rover dealer in Dartford, which is now a Wetherspoons, I believe. There's a sign of the times for you. But it's the Austin Metro Principles special edition. So I think Principles was a fashion chain or something. I think it was.
Don't act like you don't know.
I think it's a women's fashion chain, so I should know too much about it. But yes, this was effectively, I think, this was largely an Austin Metro City, but with some slightly garish seat fabric and some body-coloured white bumpers and matching white wheel trims.
Do you know if any survived?
I don't. I'd love there if there was one that turned up. It would just be brilliant. I sent Joe a screen grab of a brochure or an advert for one.
Those of you watching on screen now, those of you listening, it isn't.
Yes, I can't describe it any better than I have. But there was always for me, and I think, you know, Austin Rover did quite a lot of this, of course, with special editions over the years for both Mini and the Metro to sort of enhance the appeal of those base spec ones. It was probably a way of putting £1,000 on the base price without spending £1,000 on the extra kit. I do like stuff like that. And I have to say that I remember being quite taken by the pure whiteness of an
it was a real
Metro
thing at that point, though, wasn't it? With like XR3i cabriolets and Golfs, and the whole white, all white edition was a real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Denim and white socks. And I think it might even have come back with a vengeance. All right, then, Jeff, take us on to your second choice, sir.
Well, appropriately, a Ford. It's the Ford Fiesta Popular. Seem to have been talking about Mark 1 Fiestas quite a lot recently, but hey, it actually took a little bit of time for the Fiesta to gain a Popular. So, the Popular was used by Ford for sort of pared-down versions of the previous generation Anglia for many years. And then in 75, it launched the Mark II Escort. And within a couple of months, the base model became the Popular. Popular. God, I can't even say it quickly. But with, you know, black bumpers, moon hubcaps, rubber mats, not a lot of equipment. But weirdly, even though the Fiesta came out in 77, we didn't get the Popular until 1981, replacing the basically 957. CC, basic as you like, no parcel shelf, vinyl seats, but you could have a Popular Plus, which had the option of the 1100 engine and a few more nice bits. Of course, it survived through Mark II into Mark III guys, but it was dropped in about 1991, so obviously it wasn't fashionable anymore, and they just started calling the base model the base model again. You could also have an Escort in Popular and Popular Plus, Mark III, Mark IV, and the very first Mark V, but then again, 91. That was the end.
I think by then, I guess the name Popular meant nothing because it, you know, harked back to a model in its own right, but it sort of means nothing by the early 90s.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, isn't it, how manufacturers at this point, rather than calling them standard or base, were actually using names. So City, Popular, Merit, that kind of thing.
Does it feel more desirable maybe because
it's cheerier, isn't it? It's cheerier than, you know, you get nothing. At least you get some stripes or some cheery fabric. Yeah.
Bring pinstripes on base editions. I want to see that.
That sounds like a good plan. Go on in, Joe. What's your second base choice?
Well, mine is basic, but it requires a bit of context. So I'm a Mercedes man, as I always say. I do own a base spec Mercedes. My W123 is a 200, which is the smallest petrol engine. It's got steel wheels, it's got cloth, it's got wind-up windows, and you'll be able to see it at Festival of the Unexceptional, because this is the least exceptional 123 you could have. And similarly, our dearly departed 124 was base spec, smallest engine, cloth, steel wheels, wind-up windows, etc., etc. But what if you take that ethos one step further and apply it? Because obviously this is a time when German cars were expensive, BMWs and Mercs were expensive, you paid for the quality, but you didn't really get anything apart from the air in the cabin as standard. So apply this ethos to the car that's supposed to be the flagship luxury limousine, the best car in the world. My next choice for a base spec is the W126 280 SE. So it's the smallest spec of the W126S class, which again,
pick a base spec, about, they said. Pick a base spec and you pick an S class.
Well, it is a base spec S class. I should clarify that this car in today's money, as the base spec, was £63,000. And for that, you got the small 2.8, which in a bigger car meant it was actually slower than the equivalent W124 with that engine. It gave you steel wheels, cloth trim. It gave you wind-up windows. You didn't get a sunroof in a £63,000 luxury limousine.
It's quite remarkable that such a car existed, isn't it? Because it just wouldn't work today.
I can't imagine they sell very many of them. I would assume very few weren't at least optioned with a sunroof or something. But yeah, to have a 60-plus grand luxury limo where you're no better off equipment-wise, really, than the guy in the Fiesta Popular is hilarious. I would much rather see one of those today, just as an example of how little the Germans got away with giving you for your money back then.
Yes, I wonder if they did an S-Class City X.
What would they, with a pinstripe down the side and some graphics. But I thought the idea of a flagship luxury limousine with no equipment on it was fantastic. And the 126 stands out particularly because the 140 that followed, even the base spec cars got electric windows, but the base spec 126s, you had to option electric windows, which
for
I think
63
is
grand in the 80s, I wanted to open the windows for me.
Yeah, that's my working man's blue collar S class.
Yes, well done. I'd love to know who actually did buy one of those. That would be a really interesting choice, wouldn't it?
It's good.
Well, let us know in the comments. Are we veering too far away from base by selecting a Mercedes of any description? But I will also veer in a similar direction later, as we will find out.
Do you want me to bring it back to the buttery biscuit base?
Well, not yet. I've got my second choice. I unearthed this one just from the deep recesses of my cluttered brain when we were discussing this topic, because I've gone with another special edition, but it was a Mark IV Escort, and it was called the Mark IV Escort Designer. So what it actually was genuinely a Mark IV Escort Popular. But the premise was that you had a certain amount of credit, if you like, to then select a handful of options to make it better than a Popular. So you basically bought this car and it was effectively an Escort Popular, and then you could raid the kind of optional extras bin for things like a tilt removed sunroof or spotlights and things.
Wow, that's quite a cool idea.
I tried to Google to see if I could find any for sale. Of course you can't. I remember loving the concept. And again, I remember having the brochure and looking at going, well, I think if I was buying an Escort Popular, I would have this, this, and this. And I would be sort of endlessly specking up myriad permutations of what ideal Escort designer I would have. But ultimately, at the bottom of it, it was still a Escort Popular with the basic kind of helix fabric trim and A-frame headrests and steel wheels.
But presumably that means that no two were alike, potentially.
Yeah, in theory. And I'd love to know how they did it. Like, was it basically an Escort Popular delivered to the dealer and the dealer had to add the extras? They couldn't have been done at the factory. That would have been way too arduous. But
yeah, that's if anyone knows, if you worked at Ford back then, do let us know. That's very curious.
Presumably if it was a Mercedes, they called it a dividend or something. So go on in, Jeff, you can give us your third and final choice.
It's the base model with two names, the Renault 5 Campus Prima.
Right.
So this, when the Clio went on sale here, we got the 5 GT Turbo for a little bit longer, but essentially we were down, by 92, we were down to one model, which was the Campus Prima. The Renault 5 Campus, there was a Mark 1 Special Edition, but it was brought out as the base model in about 87 for the 88 model year, I think.
And that's for the second?
For the Supersank, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was very basic, steel wheels, pinstripes, you know, jazzy fabric. 1.1 engine, basically the bottom rung in 1989. You could get Renault 5s with Prima trims on the existing trim. So you could have like a GTX Prima even, which was added a few extra bits of equipment. Now for this 92 car, they put the two together, but it was the sole remaining model. So you had a Campus Prima, it had the 1.4 litre engine. So it was actually quite quick for a base model car. It had about 60 horsepower, something like that. Pretty good for getting down the student bar. But it was the only model they made, because if you had more money, you'd go and buy a Clio. So they actually stayed in production for 4 years, and it was very popular in the UK. So you still see them now and again. So the late fives are all these Campus Prima editions.
They did that with the Clio as well, didn't they? They ran on the Mark II Clio with the Campus until like 2007.
Exactly that, yeah. So I think you got an extra couple of years out of the Clio Mark II as well, didn't you? But so quite a smart little thing, really. It is a base model, but you did at least get wheel trims and a 1.4 engine rather than the smaller 1.1 engine.
And quite distinctive seat trim from memory.
Yeah,
it has a bit
two
of colour
names.
In it.
So I had Prima on the doors or the wing and Campus on the boot.
You're definitely overreaching as a manufacturer when you start adding more names, whether it has Prima X Plus SE. It's no longer a base spec after that. But yeah, that's a good choice. I love a Renault 5. I think that's a They drive great. And like you said, there's probably still a couple of survivors out there. But a bit like Joe's 205, you kind of think if you didn't have the GT Turbo, I'd probably have a Campus. In the middle, it's kind of neither here nor there. But
I like the GTX or the Monaco. You need
the Monaco.
You need somewhere to put your suit, don't you?
Yes, for all exactly. The business meetings you go to in your Renault 5.
Yeah, exactly. in your 39-year-old Renault 5.
Well, I've got a feeling there's a slight connection with your final choice, Joe, isn't there?
There is, because my final choice for a base spec is quite modern by the standards of what we've been talking about here. But it's good news, because I've gone for the Dacia Sandero Access. By the time we got the Sandero in the UK, so sort of early 2010s, base spec cars were far less of a thing in this country. Even a fairly base spec Fiesta or Polo or something, you were going to get aircon, electric windows, alloys, blah, blah, blah. And as a result, even the base spec wasn't actually that cheap anymore. The Dacia Sandero came along and went for $5,995, which made it by far and away the cheapest car in the country at the time. Here is a car. You get four doors, you get steel wheels with no trims, black unpainted plastic bumpers, wind-up windows, no radio, no aircon, no cruise. No, nothing. It's a car, and it's $5,995. And you know what? What a wonderful thing, because the charm of that car is just the basicness of itself, how utilitarian it is. I should put a caveat on that they obviously offered the Access as the base spec model with that low price on it. And then when people went, ah, that's great, and then turned up and realized that, again, you basically just got the oxygen in the cabin and nothing else, a lot of people were kind of convinced to spend sort of 700-800 quid extra, got the Ambiance, which was the middle one, which did give you electric windows, which did give you central locking, which did give you a radio. So I think from memory, they didn't even keep the Access in dealers. Like, you didn't see them in there. If you wanted one, you have to special order one, because they were so basic. And in the end, I think it might have even been a bit of a loss leader. But the idea of just a car that was proper Soviet spec with black plastic bumpers and steel wheels and only white, you could only have it in white, was brilliant. The definition of a white good. I think they did a skit about it on Fifth Gear saying it costs less than one wheel for a Bugatti Veyron or something. And
wow.
I thought it was just charming. And the idea of having a car that basic in that day and age, which was only sort of a decade ago, was brilliant. And I, again, to bounce off of you here, Phil, I did have the brochure for the Sandero Access.
I'm pretty sure we used the price of the Sandero as a cover inspiration for Jaguar World back in the day, where you said, look, for $5,995, you can buy a Sandero or you can buy one of these Jaguars. And it was kind of that was the cover angle, because I think the Sandero was new at the time. And it's like, well,
I'd rather have a Sandero cough.
Yeah.
Shouldn't say that, should I?
With that trick of journalism, what the $5,995 headline figure of buying a Jaguar is that it won't cost you £100 a year to service it. It will cost you another grand or two.
$5,995 probably.
Yeah,
there was probably. Actually an Access at Photo. It was only last year or the year before. Mm. So, you know, it's got that definite feel to it.
Yeah. I think in the same way, there's a bit of a following now for like Larders and early Skoda Favoras and things. I feel like the Sandero, particularly the Access, will carve out its own following in years to come.
Yes. No, I think that's a good choice. My final one, probably in the spirit of Joe's S-Class choice, is actually a Jaguar. Shock, horror, they all said in a ghast. But I went with the XJ40 Gold Edition.
Always believe in your soul.
This was really at the tail end of XJ40 production, just before the X300 came out. They were clearly just trying to sort of clear out perhaps some old spec alloys and things like that and make the base spec ones a little bit more desirable. So the Gold, I think, and again, I stand to be corrected, took the basic 3.2 and just put some slightly nicer wheels on it that had the twin headlights, which I think looked better than the rectangular lights from the Sovereign, and had this distinctive gold badge on the boot, and that was it. I don't think there was much more to it. In every other regard, it was just a base 3.2. So I think it was a way of just dressing up those last base trim XJ40s before it became the X300. So again, it's not an XJR, it's not a Sovereign, it's not a Daimler, but there's an appeal, because fundamentally it's still an XJ40. It still looks great, in my opinion. The 3.2 AJ6 engine's no ball of fire, but it's silky smooth.
Much like the Mercedes 280, it's kind of, when you peel away all the frivolous stuff, admittedly it's quite a frivolous car, but you peel away all the frivolous stuff and you actually realise how good the core product is when you're not dressing it up. And yeah, I can see the appeal in that massively.
So there we are.
Quite a base model car, they said, and you picked a Jag and a Mercedes. Incredible.
Well, true to form, Jeff, you've been the only one of us who's grounded.
Remember, Jeff, you are our resident egalitarian, as they said.
That's what I've been told, isn't it? Yeah.
You don't.
That just means I have
enough.
No ambition. No ambition.
Where was your base model Range Rover, for heaven's sake? You know, you just
imagine
you
that didn't... steel, like big old plastic bumpers on a P38. Steels. That looked kind of cool, wouldn't it?
Actually, maybe we've all forgotten about that one. That's quite a cool idea.
Well, listen, we should move on. But with plans we've got for the weekend, obviously we've kind of flagged that certainly that you two, I might be there, but I can't guarantee it at this moment in time of recording. The Festival of the Unexceptional is looming. It will be tomorrow as we go out today on the Friday. So if I believe it's a sellout, so you can't just turn up on the day. It's clearly a concept that's just run and run. You guys will be there.
We will indeed. I will be in a base spec Mercedes. Jeff, are you planning to be in something unexceptional?
It's a Mark 8 Ford Fiesta ST. It's unexceptional.
Well, it's unexceptional in that you see them everywhere. So yeah, sure.
It depends if I'm karting things or not. If I'm not karting things, I will be in probably the city, the mini city.
Excellent. Yes, I've never been to FOTI before. Very excited. And there might be a Dacia Sandero or a Mercedes 280. Who knows?
There we are. Very good.
If there's a Mercedes 280 there in that base spec, I will give you £5. In fact, excellent. £10.
So we'll check in and find out if that really happened. But reverting back to Bromley from last week, we had a bit of time in the arena with one of the local regions of the Triumph Sport 6 Club, who were there celebrating 60 years of the GT6. So it's my opportune moment to give another weekly plug of our bookazine series that we've got. And that is, we did a book a little while ago that's still in stock and available on our Kelsey shop called British Icons, the Triumph Spitfire and GT6. So if you want to celebrate a kind of, I think, often underrated a sports car and GT, the Triumph Spitfire and GT6 take a lot of beating. And this bookazine is all about those glorious, glorious models. There were quite a few Spitfires and GT6s at the show. And in fact, I walked past what I thought was a GT6, and it turns out it was a Spitfire with an Ashley hardtop, which I'd have to confess I'd never heard of, but it looked fabulous. We should try and wrap up with our final segment, which is our want of the week, chaps. So, Jeff, what have you been perusing this week?
Maybe I'm not so cheap this week. I went to a car meet the other night and I was quite inspired when a big Healey rumbled in. But actually, it was 104, but it had the slant. The windscreen obviously can adjust and it slanted down. So, you know, you're going to get flies in your face. But this big sort of brutish Healey in dark red with wire wheels, it just looked incredible. You know, and I quite like the earlier cars without the oval grill, you know, the bigger grill.
Yeah, the sort of big triangular. Sort, yeah.
Yeah, that on a summer's night, you know, when it's not too hot, you know, sun's going down a bit, it looked right. It just looked really, really good fun. And they're still expensive, but they've probably got a little bit cheaper in recent years after the sort of post-COVID boom. So yeah, just quite fancy one, really.
That's very cool.
Very much a man of taste, Jeff. Well done. Very good. What about you, Joe?
So some weeks with one of the week, obviously, we have just a mark and model in mind, and we've been looking at examples of them. Other times, Jeff and I in particular are big fans of Facebook Marketplace, which is very good at throwing up things. It knows what you like, Facebook Marketplace.
I'm in favour of buying on it, not selling on it.
No, not selling on it. No, I wouldn't buy. But yeah, it knows what you like. And sure enough, I flicked it open the other day, and what on the opening page greeted me was this 1968 Jaguar 420G. Which is, of course, the Mark 10 with a bit of chrome trim at the 4.2. This one, which is fairly local to me in Ashford, is £6,900, which, when you consider how vast the 420 is, 420G is, that's an awful lot of car for the cash. This particular one, it was in storage for a few years. The current owner's rebuilt the fuel system on it, done loads of mechanical work, given the paint a bit of a buff. The interior is not mint. There's a bit of patination to it, but I really, really like that. And the Mark 10 is it's a love or hate car anyway. I happen to really like them because I think there's such a flawed genius. And I think you could almost translate the theory behind the Mark 10 into that new Type 01 in that it's so big and so radical and so alienating to traditionalists, but a really lovable car. And I think for £6,900, you're not going to get more physical car for the cash. So yeah, I think if I had three driveways spare, I'd be looking at that. I think that's charming.
They are wonderful. But I've got a bit newer with my one to the week, actually.
It's a Jaguar. No, it's not.
Yeah. It's a Mercedes.
What's going on?
We've gone into an alternate universe. I'll tell you what I've gone with. I've gone with the Mercedes C-Class from about 2001 to 2007. Can't remember what the W number is for that. I'm old enough now that I went on the launch for these when they were brand new and was lucky to have a few in my time in the early years. So my memories are probably skewed by when they were fresh and minty new rather than crusty and old like they probably are now, because the oldest ones will be, 25 years old. But I don't know. I think they look good. And in the modern age of, to quote Joe, bloated SUVs, there's something quite elegant about one of those. I found this lovely estate car version. It's the C230, the supercharged 1.8. It was $2,500.
Yeah, see, that's, and that'll be a nice example as well. You can get those for next to nothing.
As an estate car, it's pretty practical. Roof bars, the whole lot. I think that would be a lovely car. So,
to offer a left field option, they even did that as a C55 AMG. So that tiny little saloon with a 5.5 litre V8, I think is hilarious.
I did see a couple of those, but I was trying, perhaps in the spirit of the episode, to go a bit more sensible. They might well have their day, or at least I hope they do. But anyway, well, look, chaps, we should probably wrap up because I've got to nip out and attend to something else of summer holiday importance. That was a very useful chat about base model brilliance, and I appreciated that. You guys at home, thanks ever for all your comments. The comments in the last episode lit up about our conversation about coupes and how we wish we'd have perhaps gone a bit older with our coupes and referenced things like the Rover P5 coupe and things like that. So lots of discussion was had on that, and a lot of you definitely sympathise with our lamenting about wanting desirable Fords, Mercedes and Jaguars. And I think a few have even commented that you quite like the AI render of the modern E-Type. So it shows that that's where Jaguar need to go. But so do please, as ever, get involved in the comments if you're watching it on YouTube. Give us a like and a subscribe, or give us a rating and a review if you're listening to it on a podcast platform of choice. But anyway, Jeff, Joe, thank you very much for your time. Thank you all at home, and we'll catch you again very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.